to the political cesspool known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
Welcome back, everybody, my friends, to the award-winning and relatively famous political cesspool radio program. I am James Edwards. We are now in our third and final hour of this week's live installment of TPC. Check us out on the internet at thepoliticalcesspool.org. And as always, we are coming to you live this hour and every hour from AM 1380 WLRM Studios in Memphis, Tennessee, our home base flagship station. We're going out over the affiliate AM/FM affiliates of Liberty News Radio Network at libertynewsradio.com, the best radio network in America. And, of course, we are available to be picked up via satellite and over the phone as well, thanks to the Liberty News Wire. We are having a very fun and off-kilter evening tonight in the political cesspool. Keith Alexander and I extensively covered the movie The Blind Side during the first hour, and there were a couple of reasons for that. I encourage you to go back and consult with our broadcast archives if you missed tonight's first hour. Perhaps you're tuning in late as you drive around town tonight. The broadcast archives, by the way, are available dating back all the way to 2005, just a few months after we came on the air originally. All of our shows featuring some very big names in the American conservative movement are featured there in our vast vault of programs past our library of broadcast archives. But it dates back to 2005 and includes even tonight's show. So, of course, tonight's show would be available right now if you want to go back to that first hour. The second hour, we did something we don't normally do, but something we should do more of. Absolutely. We have been taking your calls. We have been taking your calls for the entire second hour. It is a political cesspool open mic night. Apparently, at least it's transformed into one. It's not my intention, but that's what it's become. And you know what? I'm excited about it because we're getting some good calls from around the country, and we're going to continue to take those calls. So if you want to be on the line with me and voice your opinion on any subject whatsoever, give me a call at 1-866-986-NEWS, 1-866-986-NEWS, to be on the line live tonight on the syndicated political cesspool radio program. I do want to issue one other little announcement. Two things, actually. I lied to you. I want to give you two announcements. Number one, I mentioned it during the second hour. Don't forget to go to our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Join the Political Cesspool's 2009 Christmas Fund Drive. Donate to us between now and Christmas, and we will send you a personalized copy of our book. It's a book that we wrote, Liberalism and Its Effect on American Society. It's a short 32-page booklet, I guess I should say, that covers all of the issues, or many of the issues, that we cover weekly on this program. And it will be hand-signed by myself, Keith Alexander, Eddie Miller, Winston Smith, and Bill Rowland, your five humble hosts of this show. Next week, we're going to have another interesting show. Next week, we are going to feature Mr. Scott Goldsmith. He is the owner of Dixie Republic. Now, this is a store that you got to do your Christmas shopping at. You got to do Black Friday. Black Friday, as they say, is this coming Friday, the day after Thanksgiving. The day after that, we'll be back on the air next Saturday. That would be November 28th. Tune in next Saturday. We're going to have an interview with Scott Goldsmith. He is the owner of Dixie Republic. He has absolutely, and I mean it without any exaggeration, every type of Confederate memorabilia you could want. You want blankets, you want books, you want posters, you want mugs, you want hats, you want shirts, anything you could slap a Confederate insignia on, he's got it and more. And he's a sponsor of this program. So if you go to our website, you can link over to his at Dixie Republic. But he's going to be on next week, and we specifically chose next week to have him on because it's the day after Black Friday. It starts the silly season where everybody's buying Christmas gifts, which is a good thing. But keep in mind, that's not the reason for the season. Jesus Christ is the reason for the season, and we celebrate Christmas, not the holidays here in the political cesspool. But nevertheless, if you're going to do Christmas shopping, you might as well get something, get someone you love, something that is worthwhile. And I can't think of anything better than some Confederate paraphernalia, some good Confederate books from Dixie Republic. And Scott's going to be on next week to give you a listing of his inventory and what you can buy as the Christmas shopping season commences next week. So that's coming up next week. Man, we've got a lot to talk about still. I haven't gotten to one issue I wanted to talk about because we're taking so many calls, but I love it. Let's go to Todd in Lancaster. Is that in Pennsylvania?
Yes.
Todd from Pennsylvania, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
What can we do for you?
I wanted to comment about an issue with H-1B1 visas. I do a lot of work for a lot of companies up in the Northeast.
Right.
And one of the issues, it's not on the front burner of everyone's radar. I know everyone's aware of the illegal immigration problem. But the one problem with that is another way that whites are dispossessed is with these visas. Is what they allow companies to do is replace workers who may make $60,000, $70,000 a year. They'll fire those people, use these H-1B1 visas to get a lot of South Asians in. And these folks that they hire, they're not allowed to go to different companies. They may only make $25,000 or $30,000 a year, and they're working them 80 hours a week, you know, as opposed to 40 or 50. So they're getting a lot more bang for their buck from these folks, and they're almost, even the people that hold these visas, they almost joke about it with themselves. You know, it's like a slave visa. They can't do anything. But it's one way that a lot of people are losing jobs, especially in the IT industry, from pharmaceutical companies, banks, all the banks that were bailed out with the TARP funds. They use these people a lot. And some of the biggest proponents of this H-1B1 visas are people that, you know, like Bill Gates, that made a lot of money here in the United States, and this is the way he pays back Americans, is if you go to college for 4 years and you try to better yourself and you got an IT or a computer science degree in the early 90s, you know, you've just been left out in the cold.
Todd, I can't tell you how many people, of course, I'm 29 years old, so I have a lot of friends who recently graduated from college within the last couple of years. I can't tell you how many people went to very prestigious universities that I know, friends of mine. They got a degree that just cannot be applied in any field that it's supposed to help them in. I have so many stories, and I'm sure everyone knows someone who has a story like that. And what you're talking about, I wish I could add some sort of pearl of wisdom that would have bettered your commentary or added to it, but I think you covered it all very well spoken, very well said. Yes, that's right. I mean, we focus a lot on illegal immigration, to be sure, on this program, as many alternative right entities do, but and you know, we have to focus on it because we have a government now which picks and chooses which laws it's going to enforce. You know, try to stiff the IRS, and they're going to come down on you like a cart full of bricks. But, you know, illegal immigration, the dispossession of the European-American majority, that's not a law worth enforcing because it serves their interests. But even if we did miraculously get someone in who was going to be tough on illegal immigration, you still got the problem with this visa that you're talking about, Todd, which is equally a big of a problem.
And in addition, these people aren't here to stay. Apparently, they're ostensibly intended to go back home, but they usually end up staying indefinitely and getting getting extensions. But they're not even given the same rights as American workers to switch from job to job. So that's a very unfair advantage for employers to have. And so, you know, the mighty dollar is what they look at the most, and you sell out American workers. And at a time here where I think we have 300 million people in this country, and we've lost, you know, we've got 10% unemployment, maybe 17% unofficially, you know, we're allowing in 1 million, I think, to 1.5 million persons here are allowed in each year legally, not illegally, but legally. And, you know, how is the American worker supposed to keep up with that? So if you could ever get the politicians to listen to the people, that would be one area that I'd encourage your listeners to hammer their legislators on. Is, you know, if you can't agree on getting rid of the illegal immigrants, just have a moratorium on all immigration and outlaw the H-1B1 visa, and that would go a long way toward ameliorating a lot of things.
Todd, I want to thank you for calling in with such a well-spoken and well-articulated message and for bringing this to our attention. It's an issue that obviously I was aware about, but perhaps to our own detriment, we haven't been covering it as extensively as it should be covered on this radio program, and I want to thank you for bringing it to our audience attention and to mine as well. We're going to do more to shed some light on this very real problem that is afflicting our workers and our people. Thank you, Todd, for bringing it up. And we're going to take a break here. We're going to continue to take your calls as we head into what will soon be the home stretch of tonight's live broadcast of the Political Cesspool Radio program. You want to talk to me? You want to join the list of people who have already called in? Just dial us up, 1-866-986-NEWS. We'll be back right after this.
Don't go away. There's more Political Cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, welcome back to the show, everybody. We were talking in the first hour about Ole Miss, and we've talked a lot about college-related cultural Marxism recently, but I don't know if I have been made aware of an example quite as extreme as this. And this comes from, we're talking about Briarcrest being my alma mater in the first hour. This comes from Columbia, Obama's alma mater. Now, there's always people wondering why we can't have a conversation about race, quote unquote, in America. Well, I got a great reason for you, and it comes right from the halls of the Ivy League up there in Columbia. A black affirmative action professor at Columbia University sucker punched a white woman in the face because she disagreed with his rants about white privilege and racism. Now, this puts a whole new spin on that Nation of Cowards cracked by Eric Holder, right? Well, here's the story. A prominent Columbia architecture professor punched a female university employee in the face at a Harlem bar during a heated argument about race relations, police officers said last week. Police busted Lionel McIntyre for assault after his bruised victim, Camille Davis, filed charges. McIntyre and Davis, who works as a production manager in the school's theater department, are both regulars at Toast, a popular university bar on Broadway and 125th Street, sources said. The professor, who was black, had been enraged and engaged in a fiery discussion about what he called white privilege with Davis, who is white, another male regular who is also white. And this happened Friday night, a week ago Friday. That's when the fists started flying. McIntyre shoved Davis. Now, this is the woman. And when the other patron and a bar employee tried to break it up, the professor slugged Davis, again the woman, in the face. The punch was so loud, the kitchen workers in the back heard it over all the restaurant noise, said barback Richie Velez. I was on my way over when he punched Camille and she fell on top of me. The other patron involved in the dispute said McIntyre took a swing at him after he yelled, "You don't hit a woman." "He knocked the glasses right off my face," said the man, who would only give his first name as Shannon. The punch came out of nowhere. Professor McIntyre, this being the black professor who was enraged that a white woman would disagree that all whites are racist, was talking to us about white privilege and what I was doing about it. "Apparently I wasn't doing enough," said the white man. McIntyre had squabbled with Davis several weeks earlier over issues involving race. "It's a real sucker punch. Camille is a great lady, always nice to everybody, and she doesn't deserve anything like this." Okay, so there you have it. You disagree with one of these pseudo-intellectual black professors, even if you're a woman and you get punched in the face. Now, that's what this Nation of Cowards conversation is all about, right? And I'm sure Obama believes the racist white woman acted stupidly by disagreeing with a prominent black professor, because it's always racist, we're told, for a white person to disagree with a black person, especially when they're talking about racism. And as a member of the privileged white class, she had a responsibility to duck the punch so the professor didn't get in trouble. But being a racist, she didn't. And once again, a poor, powerless black man is in the hands of the racist justice system thanks to Camille Davis's racism, just like Henry Gates. But Obama can't say it, not after the way the racist honkies reacted when he meddled in the Henry Gates arrest. Better to just bide his time this time. Say, do you think a white professor, and this is just food for thought, ladies and gentlemen, in my listening audience, did you hear about this story on Fox News or CNN? Did you hear anything about this story on any mainstream media broadcast other than this radio program, The Political Cesspool? Did you hear anything? Maybe on our blog you read it. But anywhere else besides us, did you hear about this so-called prominent black professor punching this white woman in the face over a disagreement about race relations? Now, here's my rhetorical question for you. Do you think a white professor who had punched a black woman in the face after talking about race issues would have gotten charged with a hate crime? Well, me too, but this guy doesn't have to worry about that. Hate crime charges are only for white people, but there's the story out of Colombia. Colombia. You got to hear this story, too. Now, this is equally repulsive. We know diversity means a lot of things, and in this case, it means illiterate government employees. And I'm talking about not just ignorant, but illiterate. Illiterate, as in they can't read or write. After Hurricane Katrina, this is a true story, and you can read more about it with documentation and verifying facts on our blog. We back up everything we say on this show with facts, unlike just about every other radio show. And you can read about this and more at thepoliticalcesspool.org. You might have to go back a few pages in our blog because we update the blog with new entries every day, so some of the stuff gets moved back down the line pretty quickly, but you can go back indefinitely on our blog. Just keep pressing previous entries. And this is one of the things we talked about a few weeks ago. As I said, we've just been so busy lately, we haven't been able to get to all the news we wanted to cover. Diversity means illiterate government employees. Here's the story. After Hurricane Katrina, New Orleans hired what they called a quote-unquote recovery czar. Now, this recovery czar gets paid $475,000 a year. $500,000 a year. Now, as you might expect in Ray Nagin's Chocolate City, the job of recovery czar, this new position at $500,000 a year, went to a black man. His name is Ed Blakely. Now, he's no longer on the job, and a lot of folks in New Orleans seem to think that they didn't get much in return for his $500,000 salary. He was interviewed recently by a TV station in California, and they discussed the city's prospects for the future. But former recovery czar Blakely painted a grim picture. What did he say the biggest problem New Orleans faces is? Well, Blakely's a black man, so what would your first guess be? Yep, it's racism. Racism is what's holding New Orleans back. In fact, he said everybody in New Orleans is a racist. He also says that nearly 30%, get this, everybody's a racist, but 30% of the city employees needed mandatory literacy training when he got there. That's right. Nearly one in three government employees in New Orleans couldn't read. Couldn't read. But racism is the biggest problem facing New Orleans. I mean, you know, we're supposed to take this kind of stuff seriously. We're supposed to wring our hands and pontificate about how we can, you know, solve the problems of racism. America doesn't have a problem with racism except for the anti-white bias that we find ourselves subjected to. In my opinion, I don't consider myself in any way, shape, or form to be a racist. I'm a realist on issues, and I think a lot of the things that we're faced with are very silly and easily rectifiable if we can just get political correctness cut out of the mix. But to sum up this story, Ed Blakely, this recovery czar, pointed out that many faults of New Orleans, both environmentally and socially, he said believes was because, as I said before, the city has a racist bureaucracy. He went on to explain that 20 people used to report to the mayor, now only 5 do. So on and so forth. Typical stuff. No matter what we do, we're racist. The country's racist. Society's racist. This guy gets a $500,000 a year job. He does nothing. New Orleans is in no better position now than it was before Katrina struck in many ways. But despite the fact that only 1 out of 3 New Orleans city employees can read, keep in mind, racism is the problem. It always is the problem. And in fact, arresting black criminals is racist. In the United Kingdom, they're banning the term gang rape because gangs that rape people, to refer to them as gang rapists, that's racist. Oh God, everything to breathe is racist if you're of a certain ethnicity. All right, we got a lot more to talk about. Who's afraid of Michael Steele? Crime rate going up in Los Angeles. I know that's a shock to everyone out there. 10-year-old seeks attention, and he gets it from CNN. We're going to see how much of this we can get into in the last half hour of the show. Stay tuned. A lot more to come before I sign off tonight.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages. Get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool. Call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397.
All right, welcome back to the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards. Took a lot of calls tonight. And unfortunately, we have a lot of news we still need to get to. I understand that we still have quite a few people waiting on the phone lines to get through. But I promise you this, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to do a show sometime in December before Christmas in which it will be an entirely – I'm going to walk into the studio without any notes. And I'm going to rely on you. And if you don't call in, I'm going to it's going to be dead air for 3 hours. We're just going to sink. So we're going to have an open mic show sometime in December. I'm going to count on you. We had a lot of fun taking – I mean, we took calls the entire second hour tonight. But I do have some news I need to get to. I apologize in advance to everyone who has called in and patiently waited. I appreciate you. I respect you. We're going to do this open mic show in a couple of weeks, and we're going to have a lot of fun doing it. But I'm going to ask my producer to clear the lines now. We're not going to take any more calls this evening. Again, I appreciate you calling in. We'll get to you in a couple of weeks when we go back to an open mic segment. But there are some pressing affairs of state that I want to get out before we run out of time. We only have 30 minutes left in tonight's show. As I mentioned, crime rate going up in Los Angeles. What's the bigger problem in Los Angeles? Is it the fact that you have one segment of the population that commits a wildly disproportionate amount of crime, and because of that, you're concerned about the crimes they commit, and you look at the statistics, and the statistics suggest that in these neighborhoods or in these areas, you might want to, dare I say, profile a little bit more closely. Well, the problem in Los Angeles, so says the new police chief, isn't rape or murder or robbery. It's racial profiling. That is the biggest problem facing the police department in Los Angeles, so says new police chief. What's his name? I don't know. His last name is Beck. Idiot Beck, we'll call him. There's a new police chief in L.A., and his top priority is to eliminate racial profiling, which is the name liberals have given to what normal people call law enforcement. But nevertheless, idiot Chief Beck says, it's something I'm going to closely monitor. I'm going to work with the police commission on it. It's important to me that we determine exactly to what extent officers' actions are based on racial bias. Again, it's racial bias. It's racism if statistics prove that certain segments of your population are committing, just as I said before, wildly disproportionate amount of crime. So you would, you know, normal people would want to focus on those areas, but no, that's racism, and we can't have it according to the cultural Marxists. Beck also said, "Get this: the LAPD is now going to install. They're going to use the cameras that are installed in police cars, not to make sure the officers are safe or to help track criminals, but to prohibit any racially biased actions by police." he talks about stiffer disciplinary actions for people found guilty of racial profiling. He says the first question he's going to, I already mentioned that, he's going to address is the issue of racial profiling. So anyway, what's this going to do is it's going to get a lot of well-meaning police officers in trouble for doing their job effectively, and you can expect, if it's possible, for the crime rate in Los Angeles to go up even higher because now you can't target criminals with you can't even watch criminals. You can't even – I don't know what racial profiling is, honestly. I don't know what that means, but anyway – I know what it means, but I don't understand it, I guess. It's just, well, it's liberalism, and nothing liberals do ever works, nor do anything liberals advocate ever make any sense. But that's the story out of L.A. So if you're in L.A., buy an extra gun, put another deadbolt on the door, or move. That would probably be your best bet. Because once this new police chief is done, criminals are going to be a little bit safer in the City of Angels. Who's afraid of Michael Steele? We all know Michael Steele. He is the complete and utter buffoon who is the head of the Republican Party, of course. He is African-American, if you will, and he was given that job as a token. He is the only registered African-American Republican in existence in this country. And like every other black Republican, like Colin Powell and J.C. Watts, he more than likely voted for Obama. But nevertheless, who's afraid of Michael Steele? Certainly not the Democrats. They know they have nothing to fear from this imbecile. As much as he's doing to repel white people from voting Republican, he might as well be on the Democratic payroll. Even leftist John Stewart gets it. You know John Stewart. He said this on The Daily Show last night. John Stewart slammed Michael Steele over his claims that white Republicans are scared of him. I mean, can you imagine? We've covered some of the, and I don't say this simply because he's black. There are some, let's face it, let's be honest. We can be honest on this program. There are some very intelligent black people out there. I don't think they should be the head of the Republican Party because, by and large, black people don't flock to the issues of conservatism that the Republican Party is supposed to champion, although we know they don't champion it at all. But I'm not criticizing Michael Steele simply because he's black. I want to be clear about that. But he had the audacity to say, after all of these stupid comments he has made, just comical, grotesquely embarrassing comments that he's made since his ascension to the Republican Party hierarchy, that white Republicans are scared of him, as if there's anything intimidating about him aside from his idiocy. But John Stewart of The Daily Show said this: I don't think they're afraid of you because you're black. I think they're afraid of you because of all the stupid stuff, if you will, you say on television. And so again, even leftist John Stewart gets it when it comes to Michael Steele, the Republican Party chairman. What else do I want to talk about tonight? Oh, yeah, I was talking to you about this. We're bouncing all over the place tonight. We are bouncing from New Orleans to Los Angeles. Now let's go over to the United Kingdom. Political correctness in action over there. Cultural Marxists in action over there. I mentioned before, United Kingdom cops have banned the term gang rape. And once again, I am not making this up. You can read more about it. Follow the breadcrumb trail at our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org. It's not a gang rape anymore. It's a quote-unquote multi-perpetrator rape at Scotland Yard from now on. And you can probably already guess why. The reason is, yep, once again, you got it, you bet. It's because community groups, quote-unquote, complained that the term gang rape is racist. It's rape. Some of this stuff's just so bizarre that it's hard for me to even talk about it. But community groups in the UK have complained that the term gang rape is racist. It's racist to call a gang rapist. Politically correct Scotland Yard chiefs have stopped using the term gang rape because it is too emotive, they say. That's what the London Daily Mail revealed. Instead, officers have been told that they must now use the long-winded phrase multi-perpetrator rape when describing sex attacks involving three or more culprits. Critics banned the move, branded the move by the Metropolitan Police an affront to the victims of appalling sex crimes and are preparing to launch a campaign on the issue. So that must be some BNP party members. Anybody, I was going to say it's good to know that there are some people with sense still in existence over there in the UK, but then, you know, we got to understand that our good friend Nick Griffin, who was on the show a couple of months ago, and the BNP are making strides. So this has to be something that they are behind, anything sensible. But so these critics are launching a campaign to reverse this, I guess. 6 years ago, this was a debate that apparently was raging. I'm reading my notes here aloud, so bear with me. Language. I mean, are they serious? This was, like I said, I'm just reading this for the first time here. Apparently 6 years ago, this was a big controversy. It took them 6 years to get the wheels turning to the point where they would change the name from gang rape to multi-perpetrator. I can't even say that. Multi-perpetrator rape. Anyway, the BBC radio did a big story on it about this racist language, this derogatory language involving, you know, that demeaned gang rapist. So anyway, there you go. In a nutshell, there you go. Not only is it now hate and racism to call gang rapists names, it's racist to even call it gang rape. And we got more to come. We got one more segment, but more news than I can bring to you in that time. So stay tuned. And we're going to talk more about it when we continue and conclude tonight's broadcast of the Political Cesspool in just a moment. I'm James Edwards, and I'll be back with you right after this.
Don't go away. The Political Cesspool guys will be back right after these messages.
We'll return. We'll return. We'll return.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
Thank you, Art Frith, for that. And we will be doing that open mic night, opening up the lines again shortly before Christmas. We're going to do an entire open mic show. Really enjoyed all the calls tonight. We need to do that more often. Last few minutes tonight, I want to continue on, I guess, the same theme or tread we've been on for the last couple of segments here this hour. Story out of Ohio. This is, again, how completely ridiculous the proponents and advocates of political correctness can be. And we're supposed to take them seriously. If you get on there, like I did on CNN, and say, you know, this is nonsense and here's why, I mean, they're going to call you all sorts of names. In order to absolve yourself of that, you know, it's not torture, but some people would consider it to be. You have to take their ideas seriously, and you have to, like I said, you have to wring your hands and gnash your teeth and think of ways to solve these problems. Here's a story, supposedly a legitimate story out of Ohio. And I mean, it's a legitimate story in so much as it exists. It's a true story. This is something that's happening in Ohio right now, but we're supposed to take this seriously. Big rigmarole. Up in Ohio, they say there's just blatant state-sanctioned violation of basic human rights. Basic human rights are being violated statewide in Ohio. So what are they doing over there? What's going on up in Ohio? How is that occurring? Here's what they're talking about. And again, this is something that's documented if you want to research it further on our website. All of these people in Ohio are having their basic human rights violated because car dealerships are asking people to show state identification when they register. When they go in there to buy a car, they're registering their tags. People ask for some ID. Once again, I have to tell you that I'm not making this up. It is now hate and racism and a violation of human rights to require people to show some sort of a proof that they actually live in the state when registering a motor vehicle. All right? They go in to buy their tags. They move to Ohio. They want to register their vehicle. They want to buy a car. They have to show some ID. And people are saying that's a violation of their basic human rights. Now, who would do such a thing? Who's doing it? The illegal aliens. The illegal aliens in Ohio are saying that they're having their basic human rights violated because they're asked to show an identification that they don't have. They don't have it because they're illegal, so therefore they're the ones breaking the law. That's not my problem. But yeah, people up there, you know, they've got all these attorneys looking into it, and they're gonna settle this issue because we can't have illegal aliens who are breaking the laws of our country and using our country as a flop house. We can't ask them for any ID as you would ask anybody for ID because they're illegal. They're non-white, so therefore they don't have to abide by the laws. We've also been talking about education a lot on the show in recent weeks. We've been talking about situations, cultural genocide, I call it, manifestations of political correctness at the University of Ole Miss and other places. We talked earlier tonight about, one in three government employees in New Orleans can't read, so apparently they need some education. And we were talking in the first hour tonight during our epic analysis of the movie The Blind Side, we were saying that, documenting the reasons that people send and pay these absurd amounts of money to send their kids to private schools because they want them to get a decent education and they want them to be safe. I mean, that's the reason they do it. And if you go to a public school, you're going to get all of the joys of diversity and multiculturalism, which includes inept teachers. It includes substandard education, violence, and all the things that come with diversity. But I've never heard of any example of multiculturalism in a school quite as egregious as this. And it comes from Georgia. A high school teacher put a hit out on a 16-year-old kid. I don't guess I need to really go any deeper than the headline there, but we're always hearing that there's a real shortage of black male teachers to act as role models for black students. Well, now we've got one more or less black teacher after he allegedly put a hit on one of his own students. And now I read from the publication that documented this story out of Clayton County, Georgia. It reads, a local teacher was arrested on suspicion of putting a hit on one of his students. Randolph Ford, a 10th grade teacher at Mundy's Mill High School in Clayton County, Georgia, is accused of trying to persuade another student to kill a 16-year-old boy. Ford was charged after officers said he held up a piece of paper with the alleged victim's name on it, saying he had a hit on him. The student's mother said her son came home frightened when he found out. He says, Ma, you're not going to believe this, but Mr. Ford offered another student money to kill me, said Mother Marcia Killebrew. Killebrew told Channel 2 Action News reporter Tom Jones that she was shocked when her 16-year-old son told his substitute math teacher at the school that the teacher was hiring a hitman to kill him. I was extremely upset. I called the school that moment. Now, you think? Killebrew's attorney said the incident began when Ford called the student out of the classroom one day. Ford asked him if he was gay, said attorney Terrence Madden. Madden said the student became angry at the suggestion, and next day the two had a verbal altercation. Weeks later, police said Ford got a Monday meal student off a school bus and told him he had a hit on someone and needed him to take care of it. Officer said the student asked who it was, and Ford said he would let him know. The teacher held a piece of paper up with the victim's name on it, said Otis Willis III of the Clayton County Police Department. You can read more about that story at our website if you want to, but once again, we see the joys of diversity, the joys of multiculturalism manifesting themselves wherever they can. And I just can't believe why people don't want to send their kids to public schools anymore. Now it's not just the students you have to be. Now it's just not the students you have to be worried about. Now the teachers themselves are also equally criminal. Speaking of schools, did you get this? This will be my last story of the night. A 10-year-old little brat, little kid, was seeking attention in Arkansas, another fine southern state. I hate, you know, these good southern states are getting all this bad press. 10-year-old kid seeks attention, and he got it from CNN. What happened to the good old days when CNN were having people like me on? A 10-year-old kid in Arkansas is getting national attention for refusing to say the Pledge of Allegiance. Now, what's his reason for doing this? 10-year-old kid in Arkansas isn't going to say the Pledge of Allegiance until gay marriage, sodomite marriage, is legal throughout America. And I was just wondering if reincarnation could happen before you die, because I think this is actually Keith Olbermann in a 10-year-old's body. How did that happen? But the story out of Arkansas, 10-year-old Will Phillips may have become the new celebrity of the, they call it the gay rights movement. I'm not even going to touch that because it's just going to get me off on another subject, another rant. You know where we stand on that perverted lifestyle. You know, we take the Christian biblical stand on it, the righteous stand. Anyway, this little kid, this brat, refused to say the Pledge of Allegiance in this West Fork, Arkansas elementary school. CNN caught wind of it, and John Roberts of CNN came down to Arkansas and interviewed this kid who said he couldn't, in good conscience, recite the words with liberty and justice for all until lesbians could marry each other. And by the way, you know, there's still a lot of racism in the world too, he said. And eventually the substitute teacher started giving Will grief over his refusal to recite the Pledge of Allegiance. And the kid told CNN he told the teacher to go jump off a bridge. So he's a hero, though. This is what I'm talking about. Lawlessness and going against the rules would get normal people in trouble, and it should. You've got rules at school, you've got rules in life, you've got laws to abide. It should normally get you in trouble, but if you're a Marxist revolutionary, I don't care if you're 10-year-old or 100 years old, you get celebrated for it. This is a kid who refused to stand up for the pledge, told his teacher to jump off a bridge, and CNN is making him some sort of a juvenile hero for sodomy. And anyway, read more about that. I only got 45 seconds left in the show tonight. Read more about that if you want to. But listen, if you want to read something good, once again, I encourage you to join the Political Cesspool's 2009 Christmas Fund Drive. Read more about it at our website, thepoliticalcesspool.org, down in the bottom right-hand corner. And we will get that book to you by Christmas Day if you donate to us before then. Thank you for all the calls tonight. We had a very great time with you. For Keith Alexander, Winston Smith, Bill Rowland, and Eddie the Bombardier Miller, and the entire staff and crew behind the scenes of the Political Cesspool, I'm James Edwards. God bless you, and may he keep you until we meet again next Saturday night for the next live installment of our award-winning broadcast. We ask you to remember to live life the way we do, without retreat, surrender, or apology. I'm James Edwards. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for joining us tonight in the Political Cesspool. To learn more about us or to make a donation to keep this program on the air, go to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.